is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Podcast, a weekly audio dialogue between Pakistan and the West. We're podcasting from Seattle, Washington, USA on June 5th, 2007. This is Volume 3, Installment 15 of Podcast. I'm Ethan Casey, author of Alive and Well in Pakistan.
And I am Nasser Aziz, producer of Podcast.
And with us, as usual, is the usual suspect, Asad Faizi.
Hello.
First and foremost, we've got Asad's roundup. Lots of things have been happening again this week, Asad.
Yeah, it seems like Musharraf is not really doing very well. He was doing so well for the last 7 years, and then 3 months ago, when he started when he picked up the fight with the Chief Justice and tried to depose him, it seems like all hell has broken loose in Pakistan. Apparently, Musharraf is making one mistake after the other. His last, the last big mistake is that he has now decided to go full power against the lawyers, against the media, against everybody. And he's coming out more and more as a traditional, military man.
Not to interrupt, Asad, but Ahmed Rashid in today's Washington Post, the June 5th Washington Post, said that he thinks Musharraf is definitely out by the end of the year. And he used the word civil war. He thinks that Musharraf, that the current situation and the things that Musharraf is doing could lead to something as bad as a civil war in Pakistan. Is that overblown?
I never had a very high view of Ahmed Rashid, and now it's getting even lower and lower every day. I think he's wrong on both accounts. I don't think Musharraf is going to be out. I think, Musharraf is making a lot of bad moves. But I think he's pretty secure for another 5 years in office. He has multiple ways he can do that. He has actually shot himself in the foot many times, and then his head.
But he hasn't ever shot himself in the foot as badly as he's done the last 3 months.
But I think still he had several options. He's blown a lot of options, but he still has a couple of very good options open. And I'll tell you, one of the options that he has open is he can cut a deal with Benazir. As you know, that the 17th Amendment that was passed 4 years ago actually shut the door on Benazir to become the prime minister, because the now constitutional, with this constitutional amendment, a person can only be prime minister twice. Mm. Now, Benazir has already been prime minister twice. So she badly needs a constitutional amendment to help her get into the business. And now, only Musharraf can help her in that, because she does not hold two-thirds of the majority. Musharraf needs something badly from Benazir. He needs a way to amend the constitution so the constitution allows him to be the president for the next 5 years. So, like, one hand scratches the other. When you scratch my back, I scratch your back. And he can. Benazir has been a very pragmatic politician. She has absolutely no, principles when it comes to grabbing power. So she'll be more than happy to make
two completely discredited figures cutting a deal with each other to carve up the country between them. In other words,
it doesn't matter, right? These are politicians, and politicians.
One is a general; he's not a politician. But
he's a general politician.
Imagine this: if this actually happens, what you're just proposing or suggesting. I wonder where the liberals in Pakistan are going to stand up on this, you know?
That would be very interesting, and that's why, you know, I think it's more likely to happen. What is less likely to happen is Musharraf has another way. He can use the current sitting assemblies to endorse his presidency for another 5 years. Now, that is definitely going to trigger a lawsuit against him, because a lot of the constitutional experts and lawyers in Pakistan think that without a constitutional amendment, this current assembly with a simple majority cannot endorse Musharraf for another 5 years. So there's a huge gray area, political gray. Mm. And that's exactly what Musharraf was trying to do when he made a preemptive move by sacking trying to sack the chief.
Trying to exploit the legal and political gray area?
And that's the reason, that is the reason why he tried to sack the Chief Justice, because he thought that Chief Justice is too independent and independent-minded, and he may come in his way. So there are multiple options with Musharraf. I don't think he understands it. I think West needs Musharraf really, really badly. If you think about it, you know, what are the options for, even for politicians of Pakistan? They're not stupid. They know that if Musharraf, if they raise the stakes too high, and then there is a chance that military will take over as a martial law, and a new general will come in, and the new general is going to dissolve the assemblies, just like.
And he's going to be much more frank about the military rule aspect.
And it will be a martial law. It will be no assembly. So I think these people like Rashid Ahmed, they're trying to make a buck for themselves by saying things that appeal to a certain segment of the Western society.
And also the idea of civil war is pretty much far-fetched.
I think
the civil war between who? Army and the civilians?
Well, maybe perhaps someday we can get Ahmed Rashid on the show and he can debate these points with you guys. I hijacked your roundup a bit, Asad. What else has been going on this week?
So Musharraf, as I was saying, he's not doing too well. He's been every week he, you know, takes out his gun and shoots himself again in the foot.
This is a tough soldier, man.
He shoots off another toe, one toe per week.
He's hopping really badly right now. He's like very weak. And this latest escapade is that his government actually banned three major independent TV channels which were broadcasting news against Musharraf and against the government and were covering the Chief Justice, the Geo, Aaj, and One World. There are three news channels. They have news all the time. There are like 45 TV channels in Pakistan, but these are the three major news channels. And the government has been warning them, to get in line with the government policies, but they are really doing a tremendous job.
Unlike the U.S. media, right?
Unlike the U.S. media, absolutely. I think they're very independent. They're very balanced. But the government does not like balance at this time. And they want somebody like a propaganda machine that they can, you know, kind of...
Because nobody watches the state TV anymore, right?
Exactly.
It's just so low quality.
Exactly. Yeah. So and this time what government has done is they've done two things which are really bad. One is that they have manipulated the cable operators in Pakistan. Again, I think we talked about it before, but... It's not like in U.S. where you have two or three huge cable companies, Comcast or AT&T. And cable operators in Pakistan is a cottage industry. There are literally thousands of cable operators in Pakistan, and they all operate in a specific area because it's a huge investment to actually have one big cable operator. So what they have done is the government has actually twisted their arm and Ethan, last time government actually banned the channel directly. Now this time they twisted arm of the cable operators and they said, "Don't show these channels. Don't show these channels."
So it was a cable outage, not a TV ban.
No. The cable. So
were these channels available over the satellite?
So those three channels were there was outage of only these three channels. But
you get Geo TV here, right?
Well, in U.S., right? But in most of the urban centers of Pakistan, Geo, ARY, and Aaj were out for 3 days.
But now, that's a very interesting question. Sorry to interrupt. That Pakistan, what you're saying, I think, is that Pakistanis in the United States are getting Geo and ARY.
In the U.S. and in Europe.
But Pakistanis in Pakistani
in
cities.
The major urban centers of Pakistan
are not getting it. Now, that's fascinating. And that actually gets to some of the topics we're going to talk about later in this show about how and why and whether Pakistani expatriates or Pakistanis living abroad should be involved in Pakistani current affairs and politics.
We'll get to that.
We will get to that.
But things did not really end here. Then a couple of days later, he actually did even something even worse than that. PEMRA, which is the regulatory body for media, which I think is called Pakistan Electronic Media.
Regulatory authority.
Musharraf has actually issued a presidential ordinance amending the PEMRA regulation and adding two new things in it. One is, for the first time, it has given PEMRA authority to seize and confiscate the broadcast equipment of any television channel which does not comply with PEMRA policy. in other words, doesn't suck up to the government. And two, they have put PEMRA under the Ministry of Information. PEMRA used to be totally independent, and now after this ordinance, it's under the military, under the Ministry of Information, which is, you know, like the bureaucrats running the. So, and Musharraf, and the interesting thing is that Musharraf did it through a presidential ordinance. You don't do that those things in using presidential ordinance, because there is a working parliament in the country, and he could not
wait. So this is kind of like Bush signing a bill, but then doing a signing statement saying, I'm not actually going to honor this bill.
Something like that. And Bush, yeah, so Musharraf has totally taken, the real reason why you have ordinances, the president has power to issue ordinances, is if there is an emergency in the country and if the parliament, you know, cannot.
So now what? What's happening right now?
Well, what's happening is that now the media is gagged. They're under control. They're under the threat. If they go out of line, they can be their coupon can be confiscated.
But they're back online right now.
Well, they're back online, but at the same time, PEMRA's new regulations say you cannot. For example, the PEMRA's new regulations say you cannot cover live rallies of the chief minister anymore. Mm-hmm. You cannot talk about.
You mean Chief Justice?
Chief Justice. Mm-hmm. You cannot talk about. The legal proceedings, you know, so it's all kind of regulations that came out, and if any television station deviate from those, they risk losing their license, they risk losing their equipment. So I think it's horrible. It's very draconian, I think it's not going to fly for long. I mean, Musharraf is getting a lot of flack from a lot of people within Pakistan and outside of Pakistan.
Asad, before time gets away from us, what else is happening?
Well, one more important thing, and then we should definitely talk about, is that we all know that the May 12th carnage in Karachi, and majority of the country's citizens, a lot of political analysts and the opposition political parties are blaming MQM for that. And it is interesting to note that MQM's chief, the head of MQM, Altaf Hussain, has left Pakistan 15 years ago, and he lives in London. And 5 years ago, he has become a British citizen. He's not a Pakistani citizen anymore. And he still runs, micromanages the party from London. And he's the one who orchestrated the whole carnage in Karachi on May 12th. So Imran Khan, who is a sportsman
turned politician,
yeah,
right?
Cricketer hero. Turned philanthropist, turned politician, and who has an illustrious history, and he's really a hero to Pakistani people, to most of the Pakistani people. He has actually taken up this, and he has gone to London to sue Altaf Hussain in British court, and he has actually even filed a petition against the Tony Blair's government, and saying, how is it that you harbor the terrorists of Pakistan in London and you protect them? And you talk about terrorism all over. How is it that a Pakistani blood spilling on the streets of Karachi is cheaper than the British blood spilling in London? How is it that you can protect this terrorist and give him political asylum, and whereas you ask that we close down all our madrasas and everything? Plus, he's going to sue Altaf Hussain in the British court. He's already... He has come up with a legal team.
Yeah, Imran Khan is very well aware of the British system, because he's lived there and he had a British wife.
Not only that, but about 8 years ago, he won a case against Ian Botham, who is a British cricketing hero, a libel case. So Imran knows very well.
Yeah.
That seems like a gutsy and an interesting
and appropriate move
gesture by Imran. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So, well. Anything else, Asa?
Well, I think these are the three most important things. When it's going to be, next few weeks are going to be very interesting from both on both account, on the media account as well as Imran's account. He already has got a lot of great support in the British press by the British parliamentarians. Yeah. He's going to address the British Parliament on that issue, and I think in the next week or so he's going to actually launch. His legal campaign against Altaf Hussain.
So watch this space.
Yeah, and speaking about all this stuff, and of course, like a lot of Pakistanis who are expatriates living in London or anywhere in the US, they feel frustrated right now because what's happening in the country. It was on a right track. things were moving along very well as far as the freedom of press, media, and everything else was concerned. But of course, that is kind of changing right now, and we are watching it. So a lot of Pakistanis want to do something about it, especially the expats. And recently, in the last week, Ethan and I were let in on an email by a very renowned journalist from Pakistan, Bina Server. And her email was kind of on the same premise, like, you know, we should get together or do something about this and you know, try to influence the Pakistani government and pressure the Pakistani government. Basically, she's referring to Musharraf's administration, really, and make some changes, right? So basically, in her email, I mean, she said a lot of stuff. She referred to a lot of websites and a lot of organizations who are actually working towards that. And then what really caught me was the strategy that was proposed there. And it was like a three-point strategy, and I will list it here. Number one, arranging rallies in New York and all the major cities of U.S. Number two, outreaching to senators and House representatives in each state and district of U.S. and trying to engage other professionals, media, human rights groups, and U.S. civil society. Now, this was what was proposed in her email to counter this issues in Pakistan and pressure the Pakistani government. My questions were like, what are the purposes of these rallies and how are they going to be conducted? And other issue was like the, you know, engaging the US senators and get them involved in this whole issue. And I think the Pakistani caucus is pretty pathetic. We don't have much say in the US House or Senate. And so that's almost like a far-fetched idea. And U.S. civil society was mentioned, and I'm not sure what that really means, but I'm sure we have our own labels for this, right? Mm-hmm. So I think my question is, this is not a cohesive plan. I think it's sort of a blanket statement, and I don't think it's going to get us anywhere. And I would like you guys to talk about this and bring in your thoughts about how this whole issue could be run or discussed or how... Why should the U.S. government be influencing Pakistani government?
I think there's a paradox here, Nazir, because the elephant in the living room is that the U.S. does have a great deal of influence in Pakistan. As much as nationalists, you know, patriots like yourself or even liberal patriots like Bina would wish it otherwise, you do have to deal with the United States and its influence. And I think that was Bina's point in saying, you know, we need to influence because the military, as Daniel Nourani, I think, said in his reply after responding to yours, saying the reason we, meaning expatriate Pakistanis, not non-Pakistanis like me, but Pakistani expats in the U.S. should be pressuring U.S. senators and congressmen. Because the U.S. gives a lot of military aid to Pakistan that supports the military in Pakistan. And who is the government in Pakistan right now? It's the military.
I think the premise was not that. Because, see, these people are about supporting democracy in Pakistan. If you're going to use U.S. influence in Pakistan, that is against the norms of democracy. That basically means, and I made that point, if you're going to use U.S. influence, that means we are subtly saying or agreeing that the U.S. really dictates our politics.
But that's the truth.
But
then at the same time, how can you promote democracy and yet know this truth?
I don't know the answer to that question. That really is a conundrum.
Actually, it is interesting that even from the liberal nationalists from Pakistan, the complaint has all along been that U.S. has too much influence in Pakistani politics. Understandably, the relationship between Pentagon and Pakistan Army is very close, and Pakistan has been, since its time of its creation, its interests have been aligned with U.S. interest, and that has actually translated into a political U.S. exerting influence in the politics and internal domestic affairs of Pakistan, which has been a major issue with the nationalists, either on the right side or the left side of the divide. But if you approach the U.S. senators and congressmen to influence the Pakistani politics, is it not a tacit support of the U.S.'s role in influencing Pakistani politics? So there is a fundamental flaw in this whole strategy, is that just by approaching the U.S., I think this is what also Nasser is saying, that just by approaching the U.S. senators and congressmen, you are giving a tacit support to the U.S.'s role, to Bush, you know, like U.S. politicians who think it's the It's their God-given right to tell every nation in the world how to run their business. So I think that's why it's, I think it's fundamentally wrong. It's okay for Pakistanis to protest against their own governments. Even if you are in New York and you're protesting against your own government, it is fine. But as soon as you start approaching the U.S. politicians, U.S. media,
and we know Pakistan has always taken on a negative light. It's never pro-Pakistan.
Well, here's another point. Daniel Noorani.
But before you ask that point, there was another point that you made, the military aid to Pakistan, right? Yeah. And there was another proposal that was made like, we should pressure the U.S. senators to stop this military aid to Pakistan. I mean, how could you do this to your country, you know? Your army defends your country.
But right? your army also rules the country extra-constitutionally and represses the population
but suppresses democracy. Don't you want the army to be more playing the role of defending the country rather than
right? So why isn't the army back in barracks? Why is the army actually in the presidential palace?
Let me answer that question.
That's what you should be focusing.
The reason they are in the government is because our corrupt.
Well, I'm on record as being sympathetic to that's that point fine. Of view because yeah. Nawaz Sharif, yeah. in my view, dug his own grave yeah. in 1998-99.
So that's why all army has always has to come and save the country, right? Defense.
But yeah. If we agree, perhaps, that the army did save the country in 1999, what about at this point? Who's going to save the country from the army in 2007?
Well, I think
let me talk about the defense. But if you stop the military aid to Pakistan, right? And for example, the army, Pakistan army is weakened. Isn't it like weakened Pakistan? Don't we have enough enemies around us? I mean, if there's no army, I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but let's take that, theory. Then if there's no army, if we cannot defend our country, then there won't be any Pakistan to rule by anybody.
Actually, another way you look at it is that the weaker the Pakistan is, mm-hmm. the more threatened Pakistan is from India and from its neighbors, the more prominent position army takes in Pakistan. The only reason for the last 60 years army has taken such a central role in Pakistan is, as Nasir said, the politicians have failed. But I think the bigger reason was that Pakistan has constantly been, since its inception in 1947, for the last 60 years, Pakistan has been constantly under threat, Indian threat, right? And then Soviet threat. That gives a tremendous amount of significance to the army, disproportionately, unlike in any other country, like in US, for example. So dependence on the army, it becomes even more. So if you make Pakistan stronger, there's a less likelihood that army will come to the central stage and take the power from the civilian, because the more stable and more strong Pakistan is, the role of the army in the politics becomes less and less.
So how do you define making Pakistan stronger?
Well, see, the thing is, like Nawaz Sharif's government that was taken out in 1999, it was bankrupting the country. Pakistan was imploding upon itself. And after that, there would be no money left for army to begin with, and there would be no money for Pakistan's defense. So, that puts Pakistan in a very, very awkward situation there.
What would you say to liberals like Bina, who say, in effect, in so many words, if you're principled, you have to begin from the premise that the military has no business, that Musharraf has no business being president of the country because he's a military man. Case closed. And please forgive me, Bina, if I'm misrepresenting your position, and feel welcome to come on podcast and state your own position. I believe that's what many people would say, Nazir, is Musharraf should not be president because he's a military man, full stop.
I think they have every right to say that. That's not the point at all. I'm not debating that Musharraf should be the president or should not be the president. It's the right of every Pakistani to form their opinion and express their opinion. But as soon as you approach a foreign power, a United States, its senators, its congressmen, then you are in a different sphere. Then what are you saying, basically, that U.S. has a right to decide who governs what country in the world, who should have an influence in which part of the world, what should be the political system of Pakistan.
And that puts them in an awkward position by saying, we're promoting democracy in Pakistan. It doesn't make any sense at all.
It does not promote democracy.
It's a farce, right?
Exactly. So it's paradoxical to their own premise.
I've got another related point to raise, which is Daniel Noorani, in his email response in the same thread that Bina initiated, raises a really interesting point in response to Nazar. Nazar was talking about Bina had cited a some research done by PILDAT, which is online at PILDAT.org, an institute in Islamabad run by Ahmed Bilal Mehboob, who gave a very interesting presentation that Bina and I both saw in Chicago at the Human Development Conference over Memorial Day weekend. And one of the things he talked about was the wealth of various members of the National Assembly. And he's done actual research on what the assets are of individual MNAs. And Nazar raised the point that, you know, doesn't that same kind of thing go on in the U.S.? Daniel Nirani's response is as follows, in part. We often talk in terms of us and them, meaning Pakistan and America. In the case of Pakistani Americans, people like me who are U.S. citizens and apply for a Pakistan origin card, we have a dual identity. Now, this is Daniel Nirani. He is a U.S. citizen with a Pakistan origin card. We have a dual identity. We are the us and the them. Mm-hmm. I am just as much concerned about the negative role big money plays in U.S. politics as it does in Pakistani politics. I am a member of Common Cause and other organizations, American organizations, actively fighting for improvements in the U.S. electoral system. So just because something happens in the U.S., it does not make it right, and we should fight it in both countries where we have a stake. I think that's very interesting. I think there are many people in that same position who actually feel a dual obligation
but pick a fight.
As both Pakistanis and Americans at the same time.
But I mean, seriously, I mean, they can't really pick a fight in the U.S., right? They can probably have something to say about Pakistan. But again, it's the same thing, you know, like...
But Daniel Nirani is an American, so he's entitled to have a say in Pakistan in American
so
issues.
He's dealing with two big issues, and I don't think they can, as a Pakistani, we can fight two fights at the same time. We have to pick one. But whatever happens in the U.S. almost happens in Pakistan on that political level. I mean, and that's just it. I mean, I don't know about this PILDAT organization. Have they also discussed Benazir, Nawaz Sharif, and how corrupt they were and how they gather, you know, money and power? And you know, it happens in U.S. too, in a sort of a different level, like Enron. Enron is a big, you know, example for U.S. politicians too. So, I mean, I don't know if this is the issue we should be talking about right now. The issue is, this was sort of a distraction, sidetrack note. I think we were talking more about how to strategize this whole issue and how to counter Musharraf's government and as an expat and within Pakistan. So that's the main issue right now. So this is what we need to talk about, really. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not trying to address whether Musharraf should be a president or not. And again, I think I said it earlier also, and I'm going to repeat that. This is the right of every Pakistani to have an opinion, express the opinion whether Musharraf should be a president or should not be a president, whether... You know, I personally believe that he's doing an excellent job, but somebody can totally disagree with me, and they can.
You
express
still believe that after the last 3 months?
I think he has made. Yeah, well, the last 3 months has been really bad, and in a particular area, he has done really, really poorly. But if I look at all the alternatives for the next 5 years, I'm so sorry. I still don't see any real alternative to Musharraf in terms of continuing the economic policies, because I think the economic policy is the most important. Pakistan needs to, you know, be economically strong first. That's what I believe in. And I think the Musharraf's economic policy have done have worked tremendously for Pakistan. And I liked a continuation of that. And I have zero faith in Benazir and Nawaz Sharif and Ghazi Hussain Ahmad to not plunder and destroy through their ineptness and corruption, what Musharraf has actually done. So that's why, but that's a different issue. And Bina has every right to disagree with me. She can express an opinion that no, having a judicial, independent judiciary is much more important than having a strong economy, which is fine. But my point has all along been, if you are a U.S. citizen, and if you think that you should hold your government accountable, and your government is actually by supporting Musharraf, they're misusing your tax dollars. That's one position. And as a Pakistani, the position is conflicting and contradictory, which is if Pakistan does not become stronger militarily, economically, then it is it's everybody's loss. I don't care if Musharraf is in government or Benazir is in government. So you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can decide whether you're going to put your American hat on or a Pakistani hat on, because it is definitely a contradicting and conflicting.
Yeah, exactly. Point. And that's what I was trying to say. And I think what she's on is it's a good cause. It's a noble cause, right? But I think the approach is very wrong. And, you know, Pakistanis on two left or two right, they just never agree on anything. So my suggestion would be that Pakistanis should think about Pakistan first. Sit down, find a common ground, come up with some sort of a cohesive plan that works for Pakistan and not for a party or another, and do it together for the country and take it out there. And, you know, and especially the ones who are living in the US or UK, they have to be very careful. We don't want to come across as a banana republic out there, you know, on the streets. We want to come across as a strong country. We want to come across as like we are the people, we can control it, we can dictate what happens in Pakistan. And the plan has to be carved out very cleverly. That's basically what it is. I mean, it's a noble cause, I think, but the approach is very canned, old style, old school approach, and it just doesn't work. It's just sort of a, you know, we throw out this idea and it's just going to work. You know, it's actually going to hurt the country and its image rather than help it.
Well, on that note, that's pretty provocative stuff, and I'm sure we'll be following this up next week and beyond. I certainly hope that that people listening will want to participate in this same conversation continuing next week. Phone our phone number and leave a voicemail if you want to be on next week's show. It's U.S. area code 206-965-9277. Do what Seba Sarwar, whom you'll hear in a minute, did, which is just pick up the phone, get our voicemail, leave your own voicemail, hang up the phone, and then you will be on podcast. We would really like to hear from Pakistanis living in the U.S. and elsewhere on especially these matters. Also, if you have Skype, you can call Skype ID podcast. That's PAKCAST. Or you can call the number, which again is 206-965-9277, country code 1 if you're outside the United States. And visit the website, www.podcast.com, PAKCAST.com. It certainly has been a stimulating and spirited discussion this evening, and we have one more item tonight, don't we, Nazir?
Yeah, we have a poem by Saba Sarwar.
Phoned in.
It was phoned in as a Podlam poem, and it was about the massacre that happened in Karachi, the May 12th. It was about that, and let's check it out.
Hi, Nazir and Ethan. This is Seba calling from Houston. I am a writer, poet, activist based in Houston, Texas, and my name is Seba Sarwar. This is a poem that I wrote about Karachi the day after the violence began on May 12th. Karachi in flames again. Today, yesterday, the day before, and other days to come, Sharai Faisal, also known as Brig Road, is closed. C-L-O-S-E-D, closed. No way into the city, no way out. All exits from the airport are closed, burned. I want to go home and breathe smoke from bodies and tires burning, as sisters, brothers from every side, dead. The city is closed, again. Today it is because we moved us in and moved them out. And 60 years later, the city is closed again. I am a people displaced, and there are connections to be made between this fire and that, between different displacements, exiles, and choices. And today, all roads to Qaid-e Azam International Airport are shut down, closed. A city and a people in flames, all linked to soil. This is mine. No, this mine. And on the zameen they fight, while the city remains closed. I wake up in Houston, thinking and breathing the smoke. On the other side, Bubba watches TV. Ami cooks a home without fire and electricity, and no airplanes in or out. Today, I picture it, I see it, and it is happening again. People are dying again. The city is closed. May 12th, 2007. Oh, ah, 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 ah.
you.